This is Pearl Lam Podcast. I am here in Copenhagen and I'm sitting here in this wonderful restaurant, Jonia. My Danish is bad. So I came here last August and I have the most amazing food here. And also I find out that this is a restaurant founded because of love. So now I have Eric Vigard, and Tina, the husband and wife who founded this and this wonderful restaurant. So just for the audience to know, because I'm a foodie, many people who may not be a foodie, can you give a brief about yourselves?
Yeah, but like you said, we are husband and wife. We opened the restaurant May 17, so soon, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Like yesterday.
Yeah, it seems like yesterday, but still a lot have happened in those 8 years. So, but Tina and I, we met each other back in February 16, where I just came into a kitchen where Tina was running a hotel in the northern part of Zealand. And the head chef there was my very good friend. And I was in a very dark place.
Because I was told that you were very naughty.
I was very naughty.
Very wicked and naughty.
I am still very naughty.
But I think at that point, you were maybe also a bit sad.
No, I was very sad. I just lost both my parents back to back.
Wow.
And I was like, I come from a very rough upbringing.
So
and,
you're angry.
Know, I was very angry and very sad because there was a lot of questions all of a sudden popping up in my head that I knew I will never get the answer to because the ones I needed to ask were no longer among us. So I was like in a very dark place in my mind, and I just like gave up on everything, you know. And I was just like self pity, sad, you know, damaging myself, a lot of alcohol and drugs. And my friend, he just picked me up and said, "Hey, you cannot do this to yourself." And I was like, and he actually pulled me out into his car, and we drove to the restaurant where he was working in the afternoon. And as soon as I came in the kitchen, I was like, I felt like an awakening because, you know, I belong in the kitchen. That's my safe space. I don't have to think about emotions, anything, but on the food, you know, like it's like that's my exit. And then in this kitchen, through the kitchen, this beautiful redhead lady was walking past. And I just like, wow. And my friend, he's like, this is the director. You fuck. So I was like, wow, okay. And then apparently Tina was also looking at me without me noticing, and then she was kind of chasing
after
me down.
Chasing your food.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look at us, it should be the other way around, yeah. But she chased me down.
I invited you to have a walk around the local lake.
Yes, because
you know,
I was
with
like,
a bottle of wine and the sun, you know.
Yeah, and then we kissed, and 9 months later she gave birth to our daughter. So that's how we started.
Hey, so is it lust at first sight or love at first sight?
It's a combination. It can be both,
so,
you know.
Yeah, both. Because they're destined to be together. Yeah.
And I mean, if you don't have love and lust mixed together, then it just becomes very hollow.
Yeah, and love and grows, like, of course, every day, you know.
Yes, it does. And no, but then we found each other and become.
Then your friend got sick.
Yeah, then boyfriend, girlfriend, and then my friend, he got sick, very sick actually. The chef there called Mass, and he asked me to step in for him to until he was up on his feet again, and Tina accepted that idea, and I became the chef there, like the head chef, and I changed the whole menu to my own menu.
So are you allowed to be creative? You're head chef, you can do whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, and then I put a dish on, you know, like implementing a few new dishes, and this was the first, we were just like dating, like
flirting
a little bit, yeah, kissing. And then Tina, we did the menu tasting, and she tasted the langoustine with a red currant sauce, and she said, it's very sour. And to be clear, in a kitchen, milk gets sour, not food is not
maybe
sour,
the
or the wife, you know, gets sour, you know. But a dish can be too acidic. It's like, you know, and when you approach a chef, you know, on his emotions, because food is our emotions, then, you know, it's very, we are very fragile when it comes to our ego.
We are.
And so sour, so we had a massive fight in front of the whole staff. And that ignited a little bit more passion between us. Because
but it was
I understood,
too acidic, right?
I understood what she said. after tasting it again, I understand. Yeah,
was it too sour?
It was too acidic. It was not too sour. That's the thing. And then, you know, we gradually started to speak each other's lingo. Ah. So we became very strong together, you know, on the pairings. And, you know, she makes me better, and I trust that I also make her better, because we see different from two different perspectives on each other's
trait. And we talk a lot as well.
And we talk a lot. So what I see from a chef's perspective towards service, I can add to Tina's idea. And what she tastes, she can say, oh, she can guide me a little bit sometimes, because sometimes in the kitchen, all...
Of course, you're like tunnel vision.
Yeah, but also all the employees, you know, all your chefs around you.
They're also great.
But it's hard for them to taste it. To say, oh, chef, this is a little too sour. They would never say that, because, you know, emotions are high.
Yeah.
So they more or less just pat you on the back and then say,
chef.
Yeah, all is good. And just so and without that, like, resistance and a little bit of, like, criticism, you cannot grow. So you see, I grow very fast, a lot of criticism in a positive way.
But when you were working in that kitchen at the time, did you start making your name there?
Yeah, in some way I was like starting to take myself a little bit more serious. I came from being a head chef at an Almanac restaurant in Copenhagen. I worked at Noma, I worked at Plaza Tenere. You know, I've been around and seeing different kitchens. And I was like just doing day-to-day labor, because I was still a little bit, you know, I had a hard time leaving my past, because in my past I was involved with a lot of, like, different organizations, but in the criminal underground of Europe. So we were, for me to exit that was like leaving a part of my identity behind. And why I became a chef was because in a gang, you have the same structure in a kitchen. And it's like it's here and now, you know, so the action reaction happens instantly, you know, because it's not like any other trade where you can wait a little bit for the response. The response is instant on the table. So in the same, if you're selling drugs and you do misunderstanding, then it has very high repercussion, like, straight away, you know, there's no time to chat, you know. So now we are in the business of making people happy, not making people sad. So that makes, I think that's one of the good things I take from my past into the kitchens, is like, I know the roughness of both industries, so I don't have to be rough in the kitchen in the same way, because, you know.
But the reason why you wanted to leave the place up there was because you couldn't, like, really put 100%.
We had an owner, the owner of the place where we met each other. He was asking to put a steak, like, béarnaise on the menu.
And we had a bistro as well.
He's the owner, so we do it and say, okay, which piece of meat do you want? He would like to have a ribeye. Then I served him the ribeye, perfectly cooked and everything, hand-cut fries, béarnaise. He asked, can we remove the fat? But it just goes to show if...
Can we cut it into half?
Yeah, if a person demands a steak and wants a ribeye without fat...
It's ridiculous. Then have a filet mignon, you know, if you don't want fat.
No, exactly. But then, you know, you cannot... I cannot work with a person like that, for sure. No. So I said, I have to leave. And Tina agreed. And then she said, what do you want to do? I said, we should open our own place. We didn't have any money. So Tina was searching for a place for this to happen, because she kind of also, I think in her head, knew I needed something to do, or as I, you know, get restless, and then I start to
gangster.
I need action. I need action all the time, because if I'm getting bored, I start climbing on the walls. You know, so that's not good. I get restless, and a restless mind is never a good thing.
A healthy mind,
no. So no, not for me at least. And then I was sitting at home. You know, we shared in a house with my daughter from my previous marriage and Tina's three kids from before. And Tina was pregnant with our first kid in between the two of us. And it was December 16. And she came home, say, oh, I found the place. So in the car, we drove from, we lived up north. So we drove in here and in the parking lot here. I did not know the area at all. We came in the back door. And it was like, we came in here to the old, there was a restaurant here for the hotel, and it was called Le Patron, and it was like...
It was a bit old.
It was probably the most ugly restaurant I've ever seen. I am very honest. There was seats for 90 people in here, and it was like with a buffet in the middle, like, and coffee stains on the wall, like thick carpets with stains all over. Leather furniture with broken seats. And it's like, it was so horrible. And we came in and said, what are we doing here? I thought we had a meeting with somebody. Some, she looked at me very smiling and said, oh, this is our new restaurant. I have never been so insulted in my life. I was like, and she looked at me and said, what's wrong? I say, are you serious? This cannot be the restaurant. You know, the ambition we talked about in this place. She looked at me, eyes cold, and said, how much money do you have? Because we didn't have any, I didn't have any money at least. I for many reasons. A little bit of debt. And, you know, it was like, I didn't have any, I could not say anything. So she looked at me, no money? Then this is what you get. She's the clever one. And now I was like, okay, if you see potential in this, you need to help me see it as well. And then we started the restaurant.
Yeah, I remember, Tina, when I saw you in August, you told me that Eric said he wanted to open the restaurant. Next thing you did was you calling everybody that you know who can back the restaurant. And your dream was to make his dream reality.
Yeah.
Because you trust him.
But at the same time, you know, we were already running a place for a man with a financial part in it, so we didn't want to go into that solution again because Eric didn't have a name at that time. So for us to like, for me it was important to do something on our own, and that meant as well to do something financially on our own. And so I called up an old friend and asked her, oh, maybe we can borrow like a small corner in one of your hotels. She was like the CEO, so not the owner, but she was running like 14 hotels in Copenhagen. So I asked her, oh, maybe you can borrow a small corner just because my boyfriend, soon to be husband, he really wants to open a restaurant and I don't really know, let's see, you know, but in that way he could at least try it. I thought maybe she would like offer us one of the nice locations in town.
But actually the restaurant made the hotel now.
Yeah. But at that time this was the only location available or for them, like very bad run. They have been the owner since 59, so of course at some point, you know, they just let it go a bit. And then they needed to find a solution for it, so this was what we could get, you know?
Yeah, and then they said yes to us moving in here, but they also wanted to know what we wanted to use the space for, because since we are renting it, but it's also inside their building. Yeah. And we made these long prospects for what was about to happen, and we sat with the owner before we signed the papers, and he was like, he had read through them, and he said, try to sum up the whole idea. So what is it you're saying? Say, within 2 years, there's going to be a Michelin star here in the address. And he laughed.
He laughed?
Yeah, he laughed it was overambitious. Also, when I said it, I was like, okay, if you're dreaming, you know. Yeah. It was like out there, because I was nobody. I was a chef working in the back of, like in the shadow of my brother, who was the head chef R&D at Noma for 13 years. And everybody, I came, you know, broken soul with a bad history, been in prison. Nobody believed in me, you know, nobody. And that energy fueled me to also say, I'm going to prove them wrong, because I knew my talent inside. I knew I was like, in my world, I'm a very good chef. But you are not allowed to say that in Denmark, because we have the law of Jante. So if you think that you're better than anybody, then you're wrong, because we're all equals.
Oh.
Yeah, that's very Danish. Hmm. So, but then I say, well. And then we opened May.
And then very fast, then we asked him, okay, now you're laughing. Okay, if we then get a star, can we then get half rent?
Yeah. Did you ask him?
Yeah, and then he said, yeah, if you get a star, you get half rent. Because it was like for him easy to say.
It was like,
because it's not going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
Then we opened May 17. August 17, we had the Michelin inspector sitting right where Tina is sitting right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he came in and just like...
It was more or less the only English number.
Yes, we had a lot of local guests only. Yeah. Nobody traveled to Gentofte to eat my food, because who was I?
Nobody knew we were open, you know.
So we had an English guy on a Gmail with a UK number with a name which could be some dead poets, you know, like it's like very.
So and so you know you knew that this is a Michelin puzzle.
No, we didn't know.
Because then he arrived to the door and he was like wearing like an old raincoat, like a bit like worn out shoes.
Not worn out shoes, but like trainers and a watch with a like a Velcro wrist wrap. And
like he could be a chef.
He was a chef. I said, this is a chef traveling. So.
So he said that. Fast. Yeah, and then he started ordering a beer.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like.
You know, but then he started eating, and I saw the way he was eating the scallop dish we had, and I went to because back then I also helped clearing and cleared and said, oh, how did you like the scallop? It's very intelligent, he said, like the combination, and you know you can definitely then your industry if you know the term, the way he talked and the way he ate. So after the meal, I just I said, okay, he's industry, you know. So just wanted to So what are you doing in Copenhagen? He said, if I get the bill, I'll tell you what I do here. Then Tina was on table 7 talking. I was like, and I started sweating because
now
kind
the
of,
only waiter.
Yeah, yeah. And Tina was talking to some other guests, and she, you know, she's missed hospitality. And she was like, and then after she got, the gentleman would like his bill. And then he paid, and then he got up, shook my hand, and said, introduced himself with his name and said, from the Michelin Guide, and do you have time to sit with me? I said, yes, of course. And we sat down, talked.
At that point, they actually gave out the card. Yeah, they
had we had to sign some papers for them to use our name for marketing purposes and stuff. So
were you excited then?
Yeah, I was very excited. And then we didn't hear anything from them. Nothing.
But on the night, he was super sweet.
He was super sweet.
He took his time to talk.
No, but the Michelin always, we never had a bad experience with them. You know, never. They're always kind people that, they're very, normal in some sense. You know, they represent the diners very well. They are, they don't want to put us down. They want to lift us up. And you feel that. It's like not in their agenda to try to test us in a negative way, because they know the power they have, and I know there's all these movies trying to put a fork on the floor and all this, but they don't try to seek failure for us. They just want to have a genuine experience when they're here, for sure. I think the Michelin is magic.
So she took you away and she started talking to you. And then he tried to understand how you make your food and all that.
Yeah, a lot of questions. We had a talk like we are having right now. Just sitting in there, we had a table in the chamber here. And we talked for an hour or so, signed the papers. And then I went to the kitchen, and it was a very small team. We were 3 guys in the kitchen and Gina. And I said, there was the mission. And it was like, wow, I remember that. It was like...
So exciting.
Yeah.
That was magic.
And then we didn't hear anything. And then... winter comes, and it was in May, always in February, back before Corona. It was like the second week of February was the release for the Michelin Guide in Denmark. And we went skiing in week 7 because that's the school holidays. And we went with Tina's parents, invited us to Norway to ski with the kids. And we were like, we didn't hear anything. But all of a sudden I saw people that, back then I was like looking into, and they looked at me, and competitors, the candidates for a star, posting, now I got the invitation for the Michelin. And I was like, where's my invitation? There was no invitation. And then it was like, we were the week 7, as week 8 was the release of the guide. And no, I didn't hear anything. And then we were traveling.
Sitting in the home.
Yeah, because we had promised an elderly couple to do their 85 years anniversary.
Yeah.
Like
for like 15 guests.
Crown diamond wedding.
Yeah.
So and we hadn't informed the team. Yeah. So it was only me and Tina
that went home,
opened up the restaurant to do this function 3-course dinner. And then there was like this email ticking in. So we extended the guest list. So if you would like to join us on Monday,
want to come.
You can pop by if you want. Say okay. At least we invited, so they know about us. So we're in the circle. So let's go there. So we went Monday. Yeah. We came home Sunday, and then Monday, we just went in. Bought some silverware.
We took the time to walk around.
Yeah, walk around, and we didn't expect anything at all.
They would insist and say that you have to be there. Yeah. You win.
They would have pushed for
a little bit for us to be there. So I was like, okay, at least perhaps then next year.
Yeah,
I was very clear about that, and then. We go in, and mingle with everybody, and all of a sudden you're in the circle, you know, like you're with the Michelin chefs. So being seen in the right circles. Then we stand, and actually next to me is a chef who that year had been very arrogant to me.
That year,
you know, because he was expecting, he had like a restaurant with a big backing and everything, and he was like very arrogant in a situation where he said, because we were nominated for Breakthrough of the Year in the Danish.
You were nominated for?
Breakthrough of the Year.
In the Danish Eating Guide.
Yeah. You know.
Which is a big thing in Denmark, but it's not international. But in Denmark, it means something. Also, as a young restaurant, you want to have all the publicity you can get.
Of course, of course.
And we didn't win. And then I was a little disappointed because I don't play to lose. You know, I
want
to win always.
Oh, you didn't win?
No, we didn't win. And then he came to me and said, "Ah, but you also need to go and practice being super arrogant."
You need to practice a bit.
Yeah, then he was standing next to me, and he was expecting a star, and they called my name on stage, and I slapped him on the shoulder and said, "Ah, I went home and practiced, huh?" And then I went on stage. Because, you know, I'm not arrogant. Yeah. But if you're arrogant towards me...
Yeah, of course, you give it back.
Yeah, you might experience a side of me which people don't like.
But actually the only one, I think, expected us and to so get a star was this...
The only guy who said, when we came in to the event... This guy, who's the director and owner of the Danish Eating Guide, where we didn't win, he saw us and said, "Ah, so you're getting your star today." I said, "Huh, but of course you get a star." He was 100% confident. None of the other journalists expected it.
Oh, but he was 100%
sure. He said, "You're getting a star today." And I was like, "No, no, no." I didn't believe him. I was like, no way. And then we had the star.
Wow.
And then... because we started out being a little bit like over ambitious, and clearly not over ambitious, just on the right ambition, because we had the star. And then I came down from the stage. The journalist, "So what now?" I said, "Now two stars." And people just like, "You're crazy." And then.
But it was also at a time when everything was very simple.
Yeah.
We were not many.
I love it. And then you say two stars, and then what happened? They were shocked.
Yeah, and then they say, "Well, what, shouldn't you just like sit back, enjoy, and one star is good?" And you know, say, "Yeah, but it's very, but if you can get one, you can get two."
Yeah,
I think you said this about the salmon.
Yeah, because you know, I don't want to be like just sit back, relax, and be dead. Because following the current, it's only the dead salmon. The salmon that is alive go upstream. You know, so let's go upstream and see what's up at the end. And then people are a little bit, you know. And we came back to the hotel and said, "Well, what about half the rent?"
Half the rent.
And he was like,
"We got half."
And I said, "Now." And he said, and they also asked, "Then what now?" I said, "Now we go for two stars." Yeah, but easy. Yeah, it's out. It's more difficult. And they don't know anything about it. And they're like, more and more. Oh, it's like, it's very difficult. And the two stars. Back then, there was only 5 2 stars in Denmark. Yeah. It's like.
And no 3 stars?
Yeah, we had 1 3 star.
Only 1 3 stars and 5 2 stars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I said, "I want to be part of that 2 stars."
Yeah.
And people, everyone around me said, doubting it. So then it became 19, nothing happened. 20, we had the second star. So when we came down.
Then the rental reduced to a quarter?
No. Yes. No. And then we came down, and then they asked, "Now what?" And I said, "Now 1 3. Nobody laughed.
They know you're serious.
We were very serious. And it's not that you can get stars and say, "Okay, this is the recipe." But I think if you put the ambition and you manifest it for yourself, if you don't believe it yourself,
who else
is going to believe you?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And if you don't play to, you know, an attacking game in some way, then if you need to believe it yourself.
You need to believe.
You cannot be a winner with a loser's mentality.
Yeah.
You cannot be. So you need to... And, you know, that was the only guide that I really wanted to be, you know, chasing like hard, because it's like, it's a guide for the diners, you know, it's like for worldwide, it means the same.
Oh, but it feels like a restaurant.
Yeah, and they helped us when we were nobody. They made a mark in my career and in our restaurant's life.
I was told that I remember you told me that, Tina, after you get 1 star, the business was just flying.
Yeah, but it was like from one day to another, we didn't have, more or less, we did not have any guests. when we opened, you know, because again, we didn't have any money for marketing. So no one knew about us. Maybe a local couple that was going to the cinema dropped in and asked if they could have like a single dish, maybe a hotel guest, because it is a hotel, dropped in and asked, oh, can I sit here with my laptop working and then maybe have a two-course dinner or something like that. But that was it. So it was super tough in the beginning. And then from one day to another, fully booked.
Fully booked, wait list and all that. Just because one star, so it's self-advertising. So stars are very important.
They are super important. Especially they were for us because we didn't have anything. And all of a sudden we had a star. And a star just makes you, people talk about you. People want to do podcasts about you and they want to write about you. Because it's like...
They want to try your food and all
that. Yeah, people
want to
come and, you know, no, and, you can and cook, by that you
cook
get...
cook the most magical food in the world, but if no one...
Nobody knows about you. Yeah, then all of a sudden, everybody, in the, at least in Denmark, knew about us. Some foreigners, two stars, you know, because in 18 we had the star. And then in summer 19, we were really struggling to keep because then you're used to being full and then all of a sudden you have restaurant.
But also because we are located in an area where we have a lot of regulars because they can afford to go out and dine, but they were gone the whole summer. Like they were in the summer houses in France.
So we were really struggling and that was the year where we considered, is it worth it? Because it was so hard on a personal, you know, also for our personal economy, because everything is cutting into each other kind of way, you know, and so we,
no
we
holiday looked, with the kids.
No, we looked at each other and say, oh, and do we really want to, like, because we put, like, we invested all the money we gained into a new place, new everything to upgrade the restaurant. Because we said two stars, then we want to have two stars. We looked at each other, oh, and at that time we were offered by a big fast food chain to do one dish for them, a burger, and they were with the money under my nose, and I was like, oh, I cannot... You know, I don't mind. I eat a burger every now and then, but I cannot, as a chef, like bounce for that because it's not quality, you know. So I said no to the money because we were even when we needed the money the most.
We needed them a lot.
Yeah, and I said no. Then I rather close than endorse like something which kills people. Yeah, you know. So I can't do that as a chef.
But we do eat a burger.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not. You know, I'm not the saint in that way. But I cannot put my name and say, "Hey, you should eat this one because it's gourmet." All of a sudden, no.
But 2019. This is when you get your star ready, and then you have people coming in all the time, and all of a sudden, just slow down.
Yeah.
And it's slowed because your cash flow has a problem.
Yeah, but I think also the hype, if you would say, on one star.
Yeah, everybody wants to try, and after they try, it's slow down.
Yeah, it's like...
And it was still more or less only Danish guests, more or less.
Okay. Hey, so when you get two stars, the business again change.
Yeah, but two stars is very long stability on the bookings. Yeah. It changed the game.
That's because there's not so many.
When you say long
stars.
Stability of the bookings, what do you mean?
Yeah, we are fully booked for a long time.
I just mean in Denmark, there's...
So wait lists and people come in international?
Yeah, up until we had the third star. We were still fully booked with a wait list. Then we get three stars. Now the wait list
it's just a bit longer.
Bit longer.
I know. Yeah. I tried. Okay, it's really difficult. What are you talking about? But so. when I came in August, several of my friends gave me, because I'm foodie, gave me the list of restaurants that I could go.
Yeah.
So I think and my staff was booking with you. It was fully booked until you have a cancellation.
Yeah.
I was so lucky that. Yeah. But people in America, everybody was talking about you. Everybody said, have you tried his food? Have you? And then when I said that I did, how come you didn't? You did try Yonia. We haven't had a chance.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, that's the unfortunate part of it, because we want to keep ourselves a small, intimate restaurant. Where you come and visit Tina and I, because it is a family-run restaurant in that sense, and it is Tina and I who is the ambience of about everything. There will be days where we, you know, on this coming Friday, we are invited to the big ball with the king and the queen of Denmark. So of course we go, you know.
Of course.
Yes.
Wow. So, from a gangster until meeting the king and the queen.
Yeah.
Very chic.
Yeah. They have been dining here a few times. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's great. Hey, so. And you know what is amazing is I want to talk about your dishes. Mm. You know, you look at it like a macho gangster.
I am, man. But I am very feminine
on
the plates.
But then when you see your dishes, it's so delicate. Yeah. And with little flowers on it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's an outlet. Because we create beauty. And that's the thing, because we put a lot of energy into making the ingredients shine the most, also in terms of their expression through the visuals. And this is my Billy Elliot. You know, I'm the Colmine son who wants dreamt about dancing ballet. But I never been in an environment where I could express that, like, beauty, but only darkness. I grew up in darkness. I was raised in darkness. I became darkness. And out of that is all this beautiful lightness.
I mean, it's incredible. When we saw you coming into the room, you're the chef, we look at the dish. How come the dish and your image is completely two different things?
Yeah, I understand.
It should be a
raw tomahawk steak cut with an axe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. it was really very touching.
But that's probably also why it makes an impact, you know, because, you know, it's so contrasting.
Yeah.
It's very contrasting. You're
like a paradox.
Yeah, I am a paradox,
yes,
I think.
Completely paradox.
That's well said.
Yeah. And I think another good story that I want to share with the audience is, I remember you told me that you were very naughty, that you were sent to a boat.
Yes.
And then in that boat, they give you a recipe, and then that's how you start cooking.
No, but I was sent on this boat because I was kicked out from a youth detention center. Because
to youth detention center, you were kicked out?
Yeah, they could not handle me because I was too aggressive and too crazy for them. And I was driving around with like a social worker staying in hotels because there was no place to put me.
And it was like an old prison.
Yeah, the only chance they said is we're going to put you in adult prison. And then there was a guy who has like this youth project. Which
How old were you then?
16.
16, wow.
And it was like he was, he had this private, like, facility where he
security
where he housed this guy. He heard about my story and he contacted the Copenhagen government, and then he said, oh, let me talk to this guy and take him in. And he and his place was like a pre-school for, you know, being sent to sail in Caribbean on like yachts, you know, for these troubled kids. And we used to have a lot of sailboat projects in the world for Danish sailboats, because we are sailors nation, which is very good that you take the troubled youth away and get them to sail, because on a boat you have to add value, because
there's no drugs, no
alcohol, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then
you have to work with your team as well.
Yeah, but I was unfortunate while being on this camp, sort of, I got in some more trouble.
Again,
so they were like, okay, we need to do something ASAP, because the next thing, when he gets his next sentence, he will go to the youth prison, no doubt, adult prison, no doubt about it. So they were like, for the best of me, they put me on a boat. But the only boat they had was like a coaster, like a real commercial fleet boat, with a Polish crew and a Danish captain. And all of a sudden, I was just there, in the middle of the North Sea. What? You know, rough sea, and I was so seasick, and there was nothing to do. And I was like, I went to the pantry, and I found this Danish cookbook, and I opened it, and it was out of interest, just baking a cake. And I served it for the sailors, these big Polish, like sailors, never smiling. They started smiling, and they were super. They treated me different after, you know.
Oh.
It was like, and I found, okay, this is a way of communicating. Like good emotion by cooking. And that was probably the seed for my career. Yeah.
So do you start working in and in the kitchen throughout this boat?
No, but I was there, and then was like getting so homesick that I wanted to leave again. And then I said, I cannot be on a boat, and, you know, got mental. And then my case already had been for court, and it was like, I came home, and then I had to do an education. And I was like, I'll go to chef school. But I was not at all ready for chef school, because it went actually like that I walked around with I smoked so much hash and did so many drugs that I was a little bit wrong inside. So I needed to go to the brain mechanics, and that helped me a lot. And then I was not fit for being at chef school, because, you know, I was not. I was not disciplined, but then too young for that. And then I was finished with the psychiatric treatment, and was like, oh. And then I had to decide what to do. And then I said, okay, I want to be a sailor. So I went sailing. I went to Sailors Training Academy. And then I came from that back home. And then I decided to, now I want to be a chef again. And then so I went to Solo to be a chef apprentice.
Like a one star up and off.
But it was like a very place. French classic hierarchy, and I, you know.
You're not ready for
that. I was not ready for that. Somebody lesser than me shouting me in my face without
boxing
being.
Boxing you around.
The agitation within me was, I felt it, you know, could be a dangerous situation for them, not for me. But so in that sense, I was not ready for that. So I stopped, okay, not that. And then I started driving a little bit for the butcher, like for all the gourmet restaurants. And then my brother called me and says, hey, we need a hand. He was working at Noma. They had a lot of functions. So I started working at Noma, and 6 months in, I was a sous chef.
6 months you became a sous
chef? Yeah, junior sous chef.
It was in the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning, in 2006 at Noma, yeah.
They opened in what, two?
The three. So 3 years in Noma's life. I was in the old place.
Wow.
I took over all the functions together with a guy called Corey. And Corey had to switch down to the a la carte, like fully. So I took his position, which was a sous chef position.
Oh.
And then
are talented. You don't even need to do all the schools, training and all that. No,
because cooking is something you learn while cooking, not while being in the school.
But Noma, is it a very different setup than your old French?
Yes, the hierarchy there was, of course, very, you know, there was like, but the energy different. Was very different. You know, there was a new language being talked. You know, it was not like the old, like, hierarchy, like, classic sources. It was like new. Everything was new. Also the energy. And the energy coming from Noma changed the world, you know, in the gastronomic world. And on good and bad, because there was also a lot of, like, agitation and, like, full power, which everybody talks about. But there was nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. There was some situations which could have been handled better over the time, for sure. But it took 20 years for them to manifest a new Nordic kitchen so strong that it is a par with the Spanish, Italian, and the French kitchen. 20 years.
Because
it takes something, yeah.
Because Rene in early 2000, Noma was still not known.
And now prior to Noma, we didn't have any Nordic cuisine.
No, and you can.
We had a lot of Nordic cuisine, but he assembled everything under one umbrella, and then made us aware. And even people all over the world, cooking, being more attentive to the terroir, thinking about seasonality even more than they did before. So everybody, even when you travel to Thailand, they know about the Nordic thought.
Yes.
And they cook with that in mind in Thailand, which has one of the most rooted food cultures in the world.
Because there was one restaurant in Shanghai just opened 7-8 months ago. The chef is Brazilian, also was working in Noma. And the food is amazing because it's the Nordic thought. Never. Before, we always talk about French and then Spanish, El Bulli Spanish, and then Noma is really sad.
Yeah, but I think they just reboot it.
No.
Because, you know, we talk about terroir kitchen. There's no kitchen like the French.
Yes.
It's only terroir. You know, like, if you cannot have a bœuf bourguignon outside Burgundy, which is good. Because it's in Burgundy where they have the right cattle, the right wine, the right mushrooms, everything. You know, it's like, it's made for that region. So you can, of course, copy it all over the world and make a decent bœuf bourguignon. But the best one you get when it's a bœuf bourguignon in Burgundy, you know, and they are so
the right ingredient.
They are so terroir driven in France that it's, And we forgot that, and then we took it away from them by saying, oh, the terroir kitchen is only Nordic. No, no, there is a lot of terroir kitchen, but I'm pretty sure René helped everyone understand their own terroir again in a different way, because people were like being aware, okay, this is the you know, we need to find back to the roots. Because I don't think the first Noma invented anything, but just regaining control over our past.
Yes.
You know, and then highlighting it into fine dining, it's a very magical thing. But René, you know, we had the langoustines, but we didn't use it, you know, in the right way in Scandinavia, you know. And all of a sudden, things we took for granted and we never used and knew about in our region became like stars on the plate.
Now when you came to Denmark because of Noma, yeah, there's so many restaurants.
Hmm.
I mean, it becomes a foodie attraction.
Yeah, but I don't think there would be a food scene without Noma.
Yeah, you know, because I agree.
Many of us chefs who are now successful on our own name, we have to pay tribute to René, because we all been around that kitchen. And the inspiration we all gain from that, we take it away very differently. I don't cook Nordic, for example. I cook with the Nordic respect for the produce and with Nordic ingredients, French cooking and Japanese inspiration.
Yeah, you have Japanese. I feel some of your food was like a fusion Japanese. But then you told me you never been to Japan.
I was in January.
You went to January now. Bravo, where
did you go? Tokyo, I was invited by the Tokyo government for a tour around.
Yeah.
Did you try?
I tried a lot.
You tried
of things,
Sushi Saito.
Yeah, we went to Sushi Saito, for example. Yeah.
Oh, Saito is very good. But do you? My favorite is Kansai food in the place called Kanda.
No, I didn't go.
Next time when you go Kanda, no, because it's not sushi.
No.
Sushi Saito is very, very good.
It's very good, but I was. We had many good things. Mutton yakitori, which is soblaza style, but like Spanish style, with high, where you can move the racks and everything. It was really, really good, and you know, and also I learned kakigori is not just kakigori, because it's science. It's more. It's crazier than, and I just shaved ice. Wow, it's.
You went to the food market.
Yeah, we went to Toshiro market.
The fish market.
And we ate at Sesan, which is a very strong three-star restaurant, in my opinion.
So next thing you have to visit Hong Kong. Hong Kong is a foodie place.
Yeah, that's actually, we talked about it very.
And next time when you, before you visit Hong Kong, please let me know.
You know Simon Rogan? He was Simon Rogan from
Lacume
in England, three-star chef. He has a one star in Hong Kong. Called Roganic.
He just rebuilt
his restaurant.
Hong Kong is.
And we're going to cook together there.
When?
Hopefully soon.
I don't think before 2016.
No. Not.
Oh, please, you must let me know, because Hong Kong people, we are all foodies.
Yeah, but I would love, and Hong Kong is my next go-to destination for sure.
Yeah.
When I have time for myself to travel, it will be Hong Kong, for sure.
Because do you go and try food in all different countries? And then
just came from Vietnam as well.
Yeah, we were in Vietnam, Thailand. I've been in Japan. We were in Singapore.
Thailand, did you go to the restaurant?
No, I think we didn't eat at all. We ate a lot, but local street food, and we were with the kids, and we buy. We were 100%.
Because there's also a Danish or Scandinavian cook who has this restaurant in Kempinski, which is a mix with Nordic and with Thai. It's amazing.
Yeah. But we're going back to Bangkok in September.
Yeah, Bangkok Food Festival. Yeah. We're going to participate in that. And also we're going to travel just to eat, because this time when we went to Thailand, all our friends from Thailand, all the Thai chefs, all of them, oh, come by my place.
Yeah, of course.
There's so much to explore. And I think Thailand is very interesting.
Yeah, very
interesting.
Because
I think it's going to be the new epicenter for the world gastronomy, you know, because, you know, it changed a little bit. Now it was Scandinavia for many years. And I think the new thing is Southeast Asia and Asia in general. Not that Asia has been on the boom, you know, but you cannot say Tokyo, because Tokyo is a different planet, you know, it's a different episode. They have their own
culture. Completely. Southeast Asia has a lot of herbs, and they do very differently.
And it's so emerging, you know, like, and of course you have like Hong Kong, you have
Hong Kong is the foodie center.
You have Singapore, took you like, I mean, there's a lot of like destination cities, which is already stronger than strong. Yeah. But, you know, like Thailand, Vietnam, you know, all these like outer foodie wise, outer countries, they're submerging so fast right now.
Yeah.
So emerging, not submerging, emerging like right now. And I see, you know, the boom in Thailand is crazy.
So do you go and try all the food and then you get inspired?
Of course.
And then you come back and you try different.
Yeah, but it doesn't work like I taste a dish and then, oh, this dish, and then go home and then create a dish. But then when I do a dish next time, I was like, I have a flavor which, oh, this would add here.
But it can also like be like the texture.
Texture is very,
yeah. I remember you, Tina, you were telling me the first bit of money you were, yeah, when you make, you want to change the crockeries.
Yeah.
And then Eric said, no, we have to upgrade the wine.
No, that was the other way around.
Well, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted some new plates.
Oh, you wanted plates, yeah. And you said yeah.
There was
the
this, you know, the white.
Yeah, but we started out with all the Kasper Würtz, the Danish ceramic.
The Danish super amazing, ceramic maker.
Well, but
the,
a bit more rustic and stuff.
He made all the plates for Noma, the old Noma.
Mm. Yeah.
Very famous for that. And so I know him, so I said, Kasper, we need.
Can we get it?
And he made some very nice plates for us, but, you know, this ceramic big plates is like one style of food you can make in that. You cannot do what I do now in these plates in the same way. It's sort of like too rustic.
A bit too big.
And then I was like seeing this Bernardo Ecume, the Pacific Rim, the big one.
Super expensive.
Yeah, super expensive.
Very expensive.
But I went to China and said, oh, I need this one because all the big chefs are cooking in this one. She said, how much is it? And I said, oh, you can have 10, she said. 10? So it was like.
So we need to wash the plate.
So I was standing back then. We didn't have a curtain out or no door to the kitchen. So I was standing, and then the plate was gone. Clear the plate, hot water, wash. Keep it warm under the heat lamps, and then plate again. Next dish, next table.
The same.
Yeah. So just so because we only had 10.
We had ten.
But 10 for 30 guests is not a lot.
And that was during your. One star per
Yes. And then actually, they posted a picture from the Michelin Guide with our king crab with the mussel foam in that plate and saying how to elevate a dish to Michelin level. So I had 10 more.
But you also upgrade the wine.
Yes.
We did.
We still are. Now we are 3-star, but.
We are not saving anymore.
No, we are not. We are not trying to. You know, we briefly talked about this, perhaps looking for a new location, and you ask why, and I tell you that it's because we feel we have more to offer. It's not that the guest experience right now needs any more, or do we need more wine, but we want to be always in development, and we feel that we have more to offer. We have reached, in some chef's opinion, the top. And it's top for now. 3 stars is a benchmark.
Because you have to keep on evolving.
Yeah, but, you know, some chefs said, oh, you need to go home and defend it now. I don't want to defend anything. I shouldn't defend because if defending, then it's not strong enough to stand on its own. So just keep going the way we are. And then we want to add value to the guest experience. And we, you know, this room, we cannot expand the room. We cannot add more into this room. So everything we can add is on the hospitality and on the food. We're not in a rush, but we just know that we're not done for sure. We're just getting started. So in our world, we only loaded 10% of what we have to. We have achieved 10% of our ambition.
Inspiring story. You can tell a lot of parents. No need to get worried about your children.
No. Just send them in a kitchen.
Send them in a kitchen.
No, and also I think, like I used to be very rough in my past, and I experienced a lot of bad things and hard things. So I don't have to. But I don't have to be hard in the kitchen. So I think also that Yon Air is helping changing the whole industry from within, you know, because this rumor about chefs have to be like screaming and kicking and, you know, like that bad ambience. It doesn't work like that anymore.
No.
It doesn't.
I think it's different.
I think nowadays we know about the kitchen is because of the TV series Bear. The Bear.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, but I think they also paint a very bad image of the industry because it shouldn't be like that. Of course, there's a high tension in the kitchen when we do service, because like I say, it's everything
is because you want to be fast.
Yes, but you know, the worst sauce is salted with the sadness, the tears of sadness, or the sweat of anxiety. You need to be a happy cook, cooking your food. So my mission is to be a good leader and make people happy around me.
The opposite of your gangster time.
Yeah, exactly. Because I have been there, done that.
Amazing.
Don't have to do that anymore.
I'm very happy that you two can join me on my podcast. I always say that this restaurant is founded out of love, and it's a beautiful story. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Tina. Thank you so much.
Thank you.